You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe New Mexican and RadioCafe.org, where you can contact us at any time. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. We're going to be talking today about ethics in New Mexico, and it may be a little nerdy on today's show, and that's because law and government at their best are nerdy when they are solving big problems. You have issues of bribery, ethics, cheating, lying, and you've got big scandals that make headlines. But the question is, how do you fix all that? And that's where it gets nerdy. You have to have laws and rules that actually work, and that's not easy, and you have to get the details right. So that's what we're going to be looking at in today's show. That's what's happening in New Mexico now in our legislature. All of that starting in about a half a minute. Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation strengthens education in northern New Mexico so that learners of all ages can reach their full potential, offering grants that fund public education and community projects, building resilient children, families, and communities through early childhood programs, providing K-12 wraparound services for students and teachers with Inquiry Science as the flagship initiative, investing in students' dreams through scholarships, and creating a solid foundation for learning and systemic change through partnership and advocacy. For program information or to give, visit lanlfoundation.org. I'm very happy now to welcome Heather Ferguson. She's Executive Director of Common Cause New Mexico, and we're here to talk about ethics, ethics in government. Welcome.
Thank you for having me on.
So, the voters of New Mexico passed last year a constitutional amendment to form an ethics commission. They passed it by a huge margin. It was three-quarters of the voters voted for it. Why do you think voters are so enthusiastic about ethics?
I think that this is something where I know they've been seeing it in the news so much on so many high-profile cases where we had our former Secretary of State, Diana Duran, hauled off to prison for embezzlement and fraud and numerous campaign finance violations.
Spending her campaign money at a casino.
Exactly. You know, and these are all things that have been a blemish on our state. Senator Phil Griego taking votes in a conflict of interest to benefit his own pockets. It's something where, you know, we've had so many cases over the years, Manny Aragon from back in the day, Robert V. Hill. The citizens of New Mexico have desperately wanted to see an ethics commission put in place for decades. And Common Cause alone has been working on this for over 40 years. So I think that when it finally came to fruition that they could take a vote and put one in place, over 75% of them are ready to do it.
Now, those are high-profile cases that you mentioned. Are there other more sort of everyday things that happen that are also of concern that might not have made the news as much?
I think that there tends to actually be a lot of things where the public suspects that there could be malfeasance or malicious intent, but in fact, there's just many gray areas in our law. When it comes to campaign finance, that is a very detailed and very deep section of statute, one which we've actually had on constitutional laws on our books since 2010. We have a Senate bill that's being passed this year to be able to address that, and a governor that's finally in place that'll sign it. So that's one big issue. But what it used to be is that whoever answered the phone of the Secretary of State's office could give somebody the opinion as to whether or not they could spend their campaign money on something or not. And it literally came down to, before we got Secretary Maggie Toulouse Oliver, who's been great, but it just depended on whoever answered the phone. And so people who have been in office for years don't know any better. They got told 10 years ago that they could spend it on something, and they continued to do so, and they just don't actually know that that's a problem.
So this constitutional amendment was passed, and now the legislature is tasked with basically putting the exact rules in place or the laws in place that would govern how an ethics commission works. So, first of all, where's that at and who are we talking about? Who falls under the jurisdiction of the future or soon to be ethics commission?
Well, what we have done with this enabling legislation is try to lay out exactly what sections of statute that we wanted the Ethics Commission to have oversight over. So let me start with what's easier. Here's who they are not going to start taking complaints in regards to: city and county officials. What we did is we wanted to specify this to be folks who are operating right now at a state level. A commission like this could easily be overwhelmed. So it's going to be your elected officials, your legislators, the executive branch, lobbyists, contractors, and state personnel and government employees. So we're starting at all of those at a state level, and then we'll try to see what we can build into in the future.
Candidates.
Candidates, absolutely. Yes.
So if you're running for statewide office, you've got to basically follow the rules of ethics.
Exactly. Or a state legislative office. Absolutely.
So what are the rules? Like, how do people, like you just said, the rules used to be like whatever the guy or gal who answered the phone said they were. What are the ethics rules, or how do people find the ethics rules that you're supposed to follow?
Well, when it comes to, it depends on the definition here, and I hate to sound like that, of ethics and what we're really talking about here. Are we talking about conduct? Are we talking about their personal conduct here in the legislature? Are we talking about them having a conflict of interest for a vote? So they're all going to fall under different aspects of this. So they can go look for campaign finance reporting requirements and how they can legally spend public financing money in the Voter Action Act section of the statute under the Secretary of State's office. Same thing for the Campaign Finance Reporting Act, also there. The Governmental Conduct Act actually falls under the GSD department, the General Services Department. Procurement code, that's another piece. So these are all places that are in different sections of statute, but when they need to figure out where those details are, they can look to this to see exactly what is referred to and then go from there in their research.
So part of forming an ethics commission is sort of like one-stop shopping. People can figure out what the rules are so that they know not to break them.
Exactly. So I think one of the hopes that we actually had with this was to really promote and support the advisory opinions that will be made available to anyone that needs to ask for an advisory opinion. If it's in the executive branch, if it's a lobbyist, if it's a legislator that wants to know if he can take a trip to be paid for by a lobbyist or an organization, or how, you know, does the PAC reporting need to go? They can seek those advisory opinions in writing, and those will be made public before things happen so they can get that clarity. What we're trying to do is put this up as a preventative measure, because once it gets to the point that we're doing an investigation, it gets expensive. And in the current process right now, just to even open the investigation on Secretary Duran, had the legislature have to crack open the banks for $250,000 just to open the door and get the wheels running in this place. It was going to cost over $1 million if she got impeached.
Very interesting. So let's say I'm a legislator. I would go to the brand new ethics commission and say, or ask for, this pharmaceuticals lobbyist wants to pay for a trip to the Bahamas for me. Is that ethical? Then that's public information and it makes me a target.
That's a very interesting question. I think that it could show two things. It could also show that you care. And I think that's actually what it does, is that I think if somebody wants to pay for something like that and they want to make sure whether or not they are allowed to do so or not. I mean, I think sometimes, you know, we will have to hope that their gut reactions and their common sense can help dictate whether or not they would even want to take a trip by a big pharma lobbyist. But if they do, then it will also show the public that they are seeking to try to make sure that they do the right thing rather than what I think the public suspects of their behaviors. And what I've been able to see up here lobbying for over 10 years on various issues, I used to be the lobbyist with Animal Protection of New Mexico many years back, and I have seen many great, great legislators here who have a very high ethical and moral standard. And I've seen that be diminished by a few bad actors.
We already have a judicial ethics commission, and that is, it's been around for some time, but it hasn't been around forever. How does that work? How are the current sets of ethics issues similar, and how are they different?
Well, the Judicial Standards Commission does operate a little bit differently, and I think I'm not as well versed in some of the law around what some of their issues would be. But I know that certainly the recusal process is one of them. Bias is one thing that is always suspected. You know, I've seen numerous complaints be filed against judges just assuming that they have bias for either a plaintiff or a defendant, or if they are racially biased or not. And this is something where I don't know if that would be a violation of law in terms of dealing with some of these elected officials per se. What this is going to differ in terms of process is that the Judicial Standards Commission is actually operating in a very secretive, closed door process. You won't get to see those complaints. You won't get to see the public hearings. There is no public hearing. And this is something where with the Ethics Commission, we think that having a public hearing is absolutely imperative. We think that having as much public disclosure as possible without causing or leading to the interference of an investigation is really important. And we want to make sure that especially if there is even frivolous complaints, You'd be amazed how many people I think are going to want to have their frivolous complaints actually made public, because there are so many people that have complaints filed against them for swearing in committee.
So that's like what you would call a frivolous complaint.
That's actually not a thing. Yeah. It's a decorum issue. You know, it could be a personal, you know, somebody could be personally offended, but it's actually not a violation of any one of our statutes.
Right.
But, you know, if somebody decides that they want to just try to say, I've filed 10 complaints against such and such legislator, I'm not going to say that there's not people like that out there. And it's actually to the legislator's benefit to then say, yeah, these 10 complaints are about me swearing in committee.
Right.
They can go bleep themselves. You know, it's.
You're listening to the Radio Cafe. We'll be back in just a half a minute. Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation supports education along the cradle to career spectrum by investing in Northern New Mexico school districts, nonprofit education programs, and community projects. Education and community grants of up to $2,500 are available to qualified education programs that serve the counties of Los Alamos, Mora, Rio Arriba, San Miguel, Sandoval, Santa Fe, or Taos. 2019 grant application deadlines are February 15th and August 15th. For more information or to apply, visit lanlfoundation.org/grants. That's lanlfoundation.org/grants. And now back to our program. Now, there are more serious complaints, which are, as you say, things like conflict of interest or violating campaign finance rules and stuff like that. What's the difference between an ethics complaint and an ethics violation and a criminal violation?
So that is actually where the split will happen. The commission will not be dealing with anything that has a criminal violation. They will deal with things that are involved with our civil fines and penalties. And the one caveat to that is the Gift Act. There are both civil penalties and criminal penalties involved in the Gift Act. And certainly I think that that's where you get into some quid pro quo bribery issues.
Like basically vote buying, essentially. Is that what you're talking about?
Exactly. Yes. Or, you know, the intentional misleading in reports. So let's say I give you, you know, $2,500 worth of ski passes all over the state. And that happens here, you know, every year. And everybody knows exactly what they're actually valued at to be. But the ski association will tell you they're only worth $250 because that's the limit of the Gift Act.
Right.
They'll do the same thing with the golf courses. And so when you find that there is intentional misleading, there could be a criminal investigation that the attorney general might want to pursue. That's something that the media has looked into year after year, and there's never been anything really done about it.
Interesting. So, ladies and gentlemen, just a refresher of law here in the United States. We've got a criminal justice system, and we've got a civil system, and the civil system is, by and large, what we're talking about here.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So, walk us through a little bit. How would an ethics charge be brought against somebody under this proposed law, and how is it different from what's happened so far? I mean, we have had people, I mean, we talked about Diana Duran, who have been brought up under really serious ethics violations. What's new now?
So what's going to be new about having the commission is that this is going to be the one-stop shop for the public to know that this is where they can file a complaint, so they don't have to figure out if they need to file a complaint with the AG's office or the Secretary of State or GSD. Right now, it's really confusing. And this allows them to have one place where they can file their complaint. And the commission will be able to work with the agencies who typically have oversight in these areas. The Secretary of State is still going to be involved when we have a claim of campaign finance violation. And so what this will do is that then that complaint will be processed. And what we've written into the statute is that then there will be a hearing panel. That hearing panel is going to consist of one staff person of the Ethics Commission working with the executive director of the commission and two commissioners to investigate that case, prepare all of the materials. They can issue subpoenas that can compel a witness to show up, produce the documents, show up, you know.
That's a big deal.
That's a major key deal. This will be a toothless tiger without a subpoena power. And if you're not going to comply with those subpoenas, the district court will throw you in jail. They'll deal with the contempt of the subpoenas. But then after that, they will make recommendations and there will be a public hearing with the commission. And that's really what's different from the process now. Right now, everything happens behind closed doors. And so the public, as many times as their representatives may want to, you know, or their elected officials tell them that they are processing complaints, they are looking into things as they're brought to them, it doesn't matter because the public can't see anything. And without that you know, democracy dies in darkness. Nobody can see what's happening, and they just assume that the answer to that is that nothing's happening.
Very interesting. So what happens then when somebody is found to be guilty of having violated some of the rules, some of the ethics rules?
So there's a number of things that could happen, and that'll be part of what we work out through either some of the rules that the commission can work on, or we'll be adding some of those pieces into the statute for what will be allowable civil fines and penalties for violations of those. And we've gone through looking at what all, we are now at 44 other states that already have these in process. And
so you've got a lot of examples to sort of study what works best, kind of best practices.
Absolutely. You know, I think best practices is something that we as New Mexico are really trying to move forward into that realm. Nobody wants to be number 50 anymore. So taking that step forward, we can also learn from their mistakes. And so we've been able to put this entire commission together and all the enabling legislation, drawing from statutes that are in place in other states and seeing what's working and what isn't. Some of the fines in other states are upwards of $100,000. We're not even going to try something like that here, but we are going to be looking at, we want to make sure that violating one of the statutes is also not just going to cost enough that it won't just be the cost of doing business either. It can't be a $100 fine and a slap on the wrist.
Right.
Nobody wants that.
Right. Very interesting. How do you keep party politics out of all of this and the possibility of it being used, you know, in a partisan way to try to tarnish the reputation of somebody who's your political enemy?
Well, I think that's one of those things right there with that frivolous complaint process is going to be one of the ways that we can protect our citizen legislature. We're the only state left in the country, which is ridiculous, that doesn't pay their legislators. We did a poll with Research and Polling in January that showed that, and this is a jump up from last year, that now over 64% of our public want to see our legislature get paid. They want them to have a paid staff. And not only that, they actually want them to get paid a living wage, like $50,000 or $60,000 a year, so that we could have professionals up here who can not have to juggle a daily job and everything else. They can actually put their efforts into the number and the amount of work that this state, running the state, requires. So one of the issues around that is going to be that with having some of those frivolous complaints be able to be made forward, trying to have this so that there's no three members of the commission that can be of the same political party. We won't be able to have the same gridlock that we see happening with the Federal Election Commission right now, which is always deadlocked at 3-3. Yeah. And this is something where right now, actually, if I went to go file a complaint against somebody at the Secretary of State's, I could blast that out in the media and it has been picked up. And we've watched that happen in election cycle after election cycle. This actually puts a process in place where our hope would be a complaint is filed and there is time given enough to for a response before something becomes public, so that this can try to be more of a fair game and you can't just do gotcha bomb throws.
Right.
Lastly, there's a blackout period. Now, what we did do is there's a 45-day blackout period in here now, and this is, I'm saying now because we're at the beginning of the process and we know it's going to get amended. But the most important part is that what is not allowed to be part of that blackout period are campaign finance violations. So even though we would have a 45-day blackout period for some of the other issues and other statutory guidelines, the most money is always spent right before an election. And that's when the majority of the campaign finance violations occur. So we are going to try to make sure that that's when the Ethics Commission and the hearing panels can be the most nimble and expedient and efficient.
Right. So there's four members of the Ethics Commission, or will be, and how do they get on it? What qualifications are necessary for people to become members of that commission?
Well, I think that we would certainly hope that they would have the law-abiding citizen side on their record. But instead,
no convicted felons, okay?
Right. I would hope not. It's not written into here, but we are just hopeful that that would diminish the public's expectation. One of the important pieces is they cannot have changed their political party within the 2 years prior to appointment. And we put that in there because we're trying to prevent a gaming of the system. Somebody wants to try to slant this ethics commission one way or the other. You can't change your party on the day you're getting appointed. And also, within 2 years prior, you cannot have been a state officer, a state employee, a candidate, a lobbyist, a contractor, or an office holder in any political party.
Because those are the people that they're overseeing.
Exactly. And I mean, that would just lead right to a million recusal issues. And I think that that's one of the issues that we see happening when you look at some of the ethics committees that are have been in place, is they're trying to oversee people that they have been friends with for decades.
Right.
It's an immediate conflict right there.
So who appoints them?
So what we did is, and this is what we put into the constitutional amendment, is the governor will get to have one appointee, the Senate pro tem will get one appointee, and the speaker will have one. And then we also broke it down into the minority floor leader of the Senate and the minority floor leader of the House will both get to have a commissioner. And then this is the key piece, and this was our middle ground here, is that two commissioners shall not be members of the same political party, will be appointed by the four legislatively appointed commissioners, which means that you are going to have people on both ends of the spectrum agreeing on who those last two people are.
Okay.
And doing the appointment. And the commission gets to do that themselves. So we thought that would empower the commission. But that's also where you end up getting the least partisan people, because I don't think that anybody is going to want to put any polarized person in that position.
So all of this is happening right now. The public is on board. What about the legislature? I mean, they're basically being tasked with policing themselves, which most people don't really want to do, and they don't want to, they don't really like that.
There's been a number of ethics commission bills that the legislature has introduced over the years. There have been several bills that have come out of the Senate, some which we have supported, some which we have opposed. Some of them had penalties in there for whistleblowers that were higher than the people who were violating the statute. You know, and so we've kind of run the gamut on working with the legislature that, A, I think that they have heard the voice of their constituents. They've heard the voice of the mandate of 75% of the public who want this, and that the public also has been extremely clear. We have done focus groups and we've done polling across the state, and over and above all that is the messaging from their voters is for them to have a commission that runs with integrity, with openness and transparency, that has enforcement powers and the subpoena powers that we're putting in here. And so I think that we're finding that the legislature has been tremendous to work with through this process. You know, we spent working from the beginning of last June until December, just having subcommittee meetings of the Courts Corrections and Justice Committee that Senator Worth convened. We know that the Speaker of the House himself actually has taken a high initiative in this. He's always been involved in Ethics Commission legislation. In fact, I think one of his bills the other year was, could have been over 100 something pages long, but he was trying to pay attention to every single detail. And that was the hard part about doing this in statute.
Well, and also you have to do it. I mean, the voters voted for it. Now you've got to enable it.
They have to do it also this session. This has to be done. That is part of what this says, is that they put this into place with the constitutional amendment. And what is required is that you follow through by doing the enabling legislation immediately thereafter. And so here we are. We got 33 days left to go.
How will this affect ordinary people who aren't really involved directly in politics?
Well, hopefully this will be one of those issues where if they see an issue that has been coming up, or they hear about something from their neighbor that is going on, or they have questions about things, that's also part of what this commission can do. If they have a question before they even file a complaint, there's no reason why the public can't call and ask if their legislator is seen doing something. Is that a problem or not? Or is it worth, you know, they can try to get some information with that. I think that'll be really helpful. For the public also, this will be something that they can follow. There will be reports that the commission will be required to publish every year. One to the legislature, and two to get the other reports up online with the public hearings. And they can watch that and they can see that the accountability is increasing, because our hope with this is just to restore their trust.
Right.
Trust is so broken after all these years, and it's showing up by the fact that they don't show up to vote anymore because they feel like nothing counts because the system is so broken. And that's just not true.
Right, right. So trust in government here in New Mexico, trust in government in the United States, is a whole different conversation that we're not going to have right now. But also I would think it would really help to restore some faith in the electoral process itself, so that the person you are voting for, or the people you're deciding among, you know that they're at least following the rules.
Yes, if anything, our national stage has certainly helped to highlight and elevate these issues with the public. Everybody is certainly far more mindful of threats to our democracy than ever before, and to the behavior of all of their elected officials, not just at the national level. In fact, the only window that they have to that is right here at the legislature. And that's a really important point. This is a great opportunity for the public to get up here, to join us for these hearings, and to make their voices heard to their elected officials, to call them if you can't be here in person, and tell them what you want to see in this commission. Tell them how much you support wanting to see them have enforcement powers and to be able to be well-funded. That's going to be a key piece. These guys are going to need money to operate well.
Right.
And so
although
we need
it's not
that.
A huge amount.
It's really not. It's really going to be about $1 million, which is totally similar to what the needs are for the Judicial Standards Commission.
Heather Ferguson is Executive Director of Common Cause New Mexico. If people want to find out more about this, and if they want to find out more about Common Cause, just give us a thumbnail of what Common Cause is about here in this state.
Sure. We are the people's lobby. That's who we are. John Gardner founded us back in 1976 when he looked around the Capitol. He was the former labor secretary under Lyndon B. Johnson and said, everybody up here has a lobbyist except for the people. And we are going to be the people's voice. That's what we do. We hold power accountable.
Heather Ferguson, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican, an independent newspaper since 1849. The New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of the Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send us any feedback on the show, ideas or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.